Hello and welcome to this week's poem of the week. And this week we will be just having just one poem because it's a longer poem. I did mention last week, in last week's poem of the week, in which we looked at Percy Shelley's marvellous, wonderful and wonder-filled poem, To a Skylark, that this week we would either be doing a poem also about a bird by a romantic poet, which is Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats, or else, if we didn't do that, we'd be having an English fest for St. George's Day, with a celebration for St. George's Day, which is April the 23rd, of England, St. George, and also Shakespeare, because Shakespeare was both born and probably born on St. George's Day and probably died on St. George's Day. So Shakespeare, England, the St. George for the English fest, the St. George's Day festival. But I'm going to do that next week. So I'm travelling actually next week on Thursday and Friday. I'm going to Dallas, Fort Worth area. So I will probably be doing the things for the website a day earlier, which will be a couple of days before St. George's Day. So I'm going to do that next week. So I'm rambling here. But so this week then we are going to do Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats. And if you recall, though, if you listen to last week, I say I often teach this poem in juxtaposition with To a Skylark by Shelley. So Shelley's To a Skylark really is the poet paying homage to the beauty of the song of the skylark. And it's all about the skylark. It's all about the objective, the object, the skylark itself from a subjective perspective, perhaps, but nonetheless, the poet really is paying homage to the beauty of the skylark's song. But John Keats's Ode to a Nightingale is all very different. In fact, it's a deliberate, I'm almost tempted to say, a riposte to Shelley's To a Skylark, because although it's Ode to a Nightingale, the nightingale is really accidental in a philosophical sense, because the whole poem is really about, it's an egocentric, subjective meditation, if that's the right word, self-indulgent musing about the self, with the skylark really as a catalyst for an excuse to talk about the self, not to talk about the sky, the nightingale, I mean. They talk about the self, not about the nightingale itself. The one thing I'll say about the two birds before I then go on and read the poem is there's a similarity, because both birds are birds that we don't normally see, we hear. In the case of the skylark, as I mentioned last week, is because it actually sings while flying, hovering very high up in the summer. And it's normally just a small black speck in the sky, it's very high up. Not a large bird, so it has to be very high to become very small, and as often as not you can't see it, so you can hear it, you can't see it, you certainly have to look carefully for it. A nightingale similar, but not for exactly the same reason, that we normally hear a nightingale rather than see it, because the nightingale is nocturnal, a bit like here in the south of the United States, the whippoorwill. I've never seen a whippoorwill, I'm not sure I ever will, but I've heard it many times. So same with a nightingale. An elusive bird, which has a beautiful song. So, on that note, try to keep in mind, maybe even go and listen again after this to Shelley's To a Skylark, to get the different spirit. One is, I would say, a spirit full of humility in the presence of beauty. And this poem by Keats, who I love, by the way, and I love this poem in spite of itself. This poem, on the other hand, is rather than a poet paying homage to beauty, is the poet basically not humility in the face of beauty. This is pride in spite of the presence of beauty, almost scorning it. But anyway, you make your own judgment. So without further ado, Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats. My heart aches, and a drowsy numbness pains my sense, as though of hemlock I had drunk, or emptied some dull opiate to the drains. 1 minute passed and Leatherwood's had sunk. 'Tis not through envy of thy happy lot, but being too happy in thine happiness, that thou, light-winged dryad of the trees, in some melodious plot of beech and green and shadows numberless, singest of summer in full-throated ease. Oh, for a draught of vintage that hath been cooled a long age in the deep-delved earth, tasting of flora and the country green, dance and Provençal song and sunburnt mirth. Oh, for a beaker full of the warm south, full of the true, the blushful Hippocrene, with beaded bubbles winking at the brim and purple-stained mouth, that I might drink and leave the world unseen, and with thee fade away into the forest dim. Fade far away, dissolve and quite forget what thou among the leaves hast never known, the weariness, the fever and the fret, here where men sit and hear each other groan, where palsy shakes a few sad last grey hairs, where youth grows pale and spectre thin and dies, where but to think is to be full of sorrow and leaden-eyed despairs, where beauty cannot keep her lustrous eyes, or new love pine at them beyond tomorrow. Away, away, for I will fly to thee, not charioted by Bacchus and his pard, while on the viewless wings of poesy, though the dull brain perplexes and retards. Already with thee, tender is the night, and haply the queen moon is on her throne, clustered around by all her starry fays. But here there is no light, save what from heaven is with the breezes blown through verdurous glooms and windy mossy ways. I cannot see what flowers are at my feet, nor what soft incense hangs upon the boughs, but in embalmed darkness guess each sweet wherewith the seasonable month endows, the grass, the thicket, and the fruit tree wild, white hawthorn and the pastoral eglantine, fast fading violets covered up in leaves, and mid-May's eldest child, the coming musk-rose full of dewy wine, the murmurous haunt of flies on summer eves. Darkling I listen, and for many a time I have been half in love with easeful death, called him soft names in many a mused rhyme, to take into the air my quiet breath. Now more than ever seems it rich to die, to cease upon the midnight with no pain, while thou art pouring forth thy soul abroad in such an ecstasy. Still wouldst thou sing, and I have ears in vain, to thy high requiem become a sod. Thou wast not born for death, immortal bird. No hungry generations tread thee down. The voice I hear this passing night was heard in ancient days by emperor and clown. Perhaps the self-same song that found a path through the sad heart of Ruth, when sick for home, she stood in tears amid the alien corn, the same that oft-times hath charmed magic casements opened on the foam of perilous seas in fairy lands, forlorn. Forlorn, the very word is like a bell, to toll me back from thee to my soul self. Adieu. The fancy cannot cheat so well as she is fain to do, deceiving elf. Adieu, adieu, thy plaintive anthem fades, past the near meadows, over the still stream, up the hillside, and now 'tis buried deep in the next valley glades. Was it a vision or a waking dream? Fled is that music. Do I wake or sleep? I'm going to resist the temptation to continue talking about that poem, although I could. I've taught it many times. We could go through it stanza by stanza and elucidate it. Perhaps maybe that's what I'll do one day in the Home is Where the Hearth is podcast, where we discuss various things. But for the time being, I'm going to let John Keats speak for itself and be quiet. So thanks again for listening. This week's been Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats. Join me next week for the St. George's Day Festival in the Poem of the Week. Until then, goodbye and God bless.